Thank you very much, Rachel, for inviting me. I'm going to talk a bit about climate generally. Can people hear me? Can you hear me back there? If I fade away, please wave, and I'll try to raise my voice. With some emphasis on the ocean, which I know more about. Climate is almost everything, and I've challenged audiences to find something in earth sciences or human society that I can't connect to climate. Problems of what the sun does as part of climate, and one can't possibly talk about the whole thing in probably less than a decade, and I'm not even going to try. And so I'm going to take you in sort of an almost random look at some things connected to climate, in the hope, actually, that feel free to interrupt me and ask questions. I mean, I much prefer that to a monologue, even before we get to the question and answer session. So that's all that's going to happen here tonight. My hope is that I might provoke some comment or question about something. But the possibilities are so broad that I'm assuming people will, even something I don't even mention, well, you can try me. One of the dangers in this field is that you try to sound like an expert where you really don't know anything. So take that as a given. I actually put this up just to remind people that actually there's a very serious problem of language in this subject. This is not, per se, anything to do with climate. It's about science generally, and the way terms that scientists use often mean something totally different to the public, and often this is ignored. This is the source of an enormous amount of misunderstanding and, in some cases, unhappiness. I'm not going to lead you through this list. I think I gave it to you so that you might have a copy, just to pick a couple of them out. Words like positive feedback, you might say, that's pretty good. I got some positive feedback from my talk. But in a science context, it can be an absolute disaster. It means the system's going to run away on you. The effect feeds back on itself. Another one is the word error, which scientists use all the time. And to the public, it quite clearly often means that something is wrong, whereas to a scientist, it basically means how uncertain you are, how big is the error. And you can kind of see the possibilities for misunderstanding, and it's quite possible that I will use a term here that maybe means something very different to you than what I think it does, and if so, please interrupt. And there's a whole bunch of them, and I'm sure there are more. If anybody has some other examples, I started adding to this. It probably goes on and on. Anyway, I'm going to talk about climate, and say I'm going to sort of wander through a number of almost unrelated ideas, except that they're all climate. This is a picture, a reconstruction, you might say, related to the climate here, not so terribly long. 14,000 years ago, in which perhaps it's clear. Here's Scotland up here, the outline of the modern UK. Here, of course, is all this land here between us and France, and this white is supposed to be what this big ice sheet looked like 14,000 years ago. 14,000 years ago, depending upon your perspective, is a very long time ago. Of course, from many points of view, it's yesterday. There were modern people in Europe at this time. And so here in Oxford is just about at the edge of this. Somewhere to the north is about 2 kilometers of ice. And so, you know, the point of showing you this is mainly to remind you of what I regard as, in some sense, the most important fact about climate generally, which is it's been very different in the past. That's a very serious statement, I think not subject to any debate whatsoever. And it's a useful context to remember when we get into perhaps some of the more controversial elements of this. At the opposite extreme, this is obviously not just to illustrate the point or to remind me, is that there were other periods, some millions of years ago, when there were palm trees growing in Wyoming. Those of you who know Wyoming in the middle of the United States will realize that palm trees today is just absolutely impossible. It was tropical. There were pretty clearly dinosaurs whom generally thought to be tropical creatures. Whether they warm or cold-blooded is one of the big arguments in biology, but there were dinosaurs living at the North Pole, and any kind of lizard, for example, could not possibly live at the North Pole today. So the climate was both glacial, in fact, and warm. Actually, there's a period roughly 500 million years ago, where some people will tell you that the Earth froze over completely. The so-called snowball Earth, and the evidence is pretty good that happened. So, you know, climate is something that's been all over the place, mostly on timescales that are much longer than human lifetimes or the times that there have been modern people. But from what I showed you, I hope it's clear that even with in the comparatively short interval that there have been modern humans, the climate has been very different. And this sort of thing that scientists look at, and it's meant to be, again, kind of representative of the sort of thing that people use to raise questions about, you know, what do we understand about this system? And there are thousands of such graphs I should show you. Most of you probably can't read this. This is supposed to be 450,000 years ago, keeping in mind that the Earth is something like 4 billion years old, so this is a fair stretch of time, but nowhere near the whole history of the Earth, up to something that is close to the present. And actually, there are two things plotted on there. It doesn't really matter which is which, because obviously they tend to go up and down together, but on the right, it shows you what is an estimate of the temperature of the Earth as a whole. Whether it's the Earth as a whole is one of, and why people think that is an interesting question. But here we are up here today, fairly constant. That's where we live, right up at the very tip. And you go back, say 10,000 years ago, when there was that great big glacier sitting to the north of us. It's roughly 8 or 10 degrees colder than today. And then you see this funny kind of zigzag pattern up and down. And those are the great glacial cycles when the ice sheets grow very, very slowly. And then apparently, somehow abruptly disappear, and then it all starts over again. And kind of interesting to wonder, well, what does the future hold? And we can try to talk about that. The other curve on there, and the red curve, actually, says to me, is the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere. And it's curves like this which has made people kind of get worried about pumping a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, because it's pretty robust, actually. There really is some association between how much carbon dioxide there is in the atmosphere and what the global temperatures are. I would hesitate to go much beyond the word association. But it might make you worry that if you could control this red curve, for example, by cranking it way up past this increase going on there, that maybe you're going to do something to the temperature of the Earth. And, I don't want to tell you that that's really known, because it's something we can talk about, the ongoing debates about adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. But it was this sort of thing years ago, where the record didn't go back as far in time, that made people begin to worry that maybe we were going to do something rather dramatic and disagreeable to the Earth. Much of the science, which I'd be happy to tell you the bit that I know, revolves around the question of, well, okay, is it increasing carbon dioxide that raises the temperature, or is it increasing temperatures that raise the carbon dioxide? Or what I would guess, the answer is yes. Both of those things are, both those things are going on, and we could kind of talk about that if anybody would like to.
Well, before you move on, the right-hand end.
Yes.
That looks like the only spike where the blue goes up before the red.
Well,
the extra jump.
Yeah. People heard the question: does the blue go up before the red? I think if you look carefully, you'll see other places like here, for example. Part of the science of this is asking, do you really know the date by which that happened? And, you know, I'm happy to talk about where these things come from and the issues that people have, but a number of people have looked at this sort of record and said, oh yeah, the temperature went up before the carbon dioxide did, therefore it's the temperature controlling the carbon dioxide. That's much too simplistic an inference, only in part because of the uncertainty about whether this peak actually did occur at that time or a bit earlier or later. You might wonder, it's an interesting subject, how do you know how old this is? This is 300,000 years. I should tell you that these records come, in this case, from drilling into the Antarctic ice cap and then measuring properties within the ice. And you know the depth, but then the question is, well, when was that? Is a kilometer down 350,000 years old or 450,000 years old? And again, I'm not an expert in this, but I know a bit about it. The oceanography comes in large part, through a couple of ways, but from the point of view of this particular plot, it's quite clear that during what we call the last glacial maximum, about 23 years ago, when the continental ice sheets were at their maximum, it was an enormous amount of carbon that somehow had been taken out of the atmosphere, if you like, an anti-greenhouse was going on. And so where was it? You know, we as human beings, we add today, I think there's a picture of it, about 1 billion tons of carbon a year to the ocean. Okay. Well, the change from here to here dwarfs that. I must admit I've forgotten how many thousands of millions of tons of carbon are missing from the atmosphere that are there today. So where was it? And how did it come back out again? Because it went out and then it came back in again. Where was all that carbon? And in fact, nobody really knows. People guess that it was in the ocean, and there's an interesting question of how would you figure out where it was, and is the ocean the only possibility? Okay, so this is a record that prompted much interest in this whole question of climate. When I started out doing oceanography many years ago, there was very little talk about climate. People didn't think about it very much. And then there was a man named Charles David Keeling, who in 1957, so at this point, decided to measure the content of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. He was at what is the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and his boss there, a famous and very good scientist named Roger Revelle, many of you will have heard of said, no, it's not possible to do that. Keeling, whom I knew, being Keeling, did it anyway. And he very quickly showed, and there are many versions of this now famous Keeling curve, that the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere in Hawaii, which is pretty representative of the whole Earth, we know that, was increasing, what looks like almost exponentially. This is a little blow-up of it showing you the fact that you can see the annual change in carbon dioxide as the plants grow and die and grow and die, dominated by the northern hemisphere, because that's where most of the land is. But the trend is unmistakable. And it was this curve that got Revel, who then became a pioneer of this subject, basically raising the question of, well, what the devil is this going to do? What I should tell you, that it's way back, actually in about 1900 and even earlier, that there was some scientists who already realized that we were changing the properties of the atmosphere. A famous man named Arrhenius, a chemist in 1907, who pretty much worked it all out, what was going to go on, although it goes back, some of the basic ideas go back much earlier. We're doing a big experiment here. What's going to happen? And Revel and then many others got rather alarmed by what they could see in the Keeling curve, and it raises this question, for which is, you all know there are many words been written and yelled and screamed in some cases about what does this mean for us. It's maybe worth just mentioning that carbon dioxide is not the only so-called greenhouse gas that changes the properties of the atmosphere. There are others like methane and fluorocarbons, the freons, and so forth. These are all greenhouse gases. And there's a lot of issues. And see, here you see I'm jumping around. People don't understand this. And this is one of the reasons that people like me are, come and think it's important to talk about this. It's very hard for people to understand climate. And I really think it's actually a product of human evolution. This was a headline in The Independent while we've been living here. It's actually, you can't read it, but it's 13th of February, 2012. Those of you here in Oxford will remember there was a very cold 10 days fortnight in, I guess, late January or early February. I don't quite remember the snowfall that we had. And lo and behold, The Independent got some scientists to say, oh, this is because the sea ice cover in the Arctic is changing. And then the BBC repeated it, and probably some of the other newspapers and so forth. And if you read it through, it's quite clearly, it's confusing weather, which is the sort of thing we've been living with the last few weeks, with climate, which I hope it's clear from what I showed here. Climate changes over many different time scales, ranging from a few years on out to millions or even billions of years. And my comment when I saw this was, gee, if you go back 100 years, well, there was no problem with sea ice. Weren't there cold spells in Oxford? Didn't it snow? I mean, so is this obviously a climate change? And then, of course, it warmed up, and then it started to rain. Here's another one from where I live. It's also oceanic. Sea ice is an oceanic phenomenon. It's a headline about a year ago in the Boston Globe, which is the main newspaper in Boston. And again, you read it, it was a nice picture right on the front page. It quite clearly confuses two different things, which I will now just tell you. I mean, this is several hours of discussion in its own right. We think that sea level is rising globally, and I think I've got a picture of an estimate of that in just a minute, a few millimeters per year. We're not quite certain what it is. But if you live on the coast, the issue is not, for the next some decades, is not so much this very little slow rise. It's things like storm surges, or if you lived in Japan, it's tsunamis. And if you read the article, it's quite clearly all confused. The so-called storm surges, not unfamiliar in this country, may be increasing, maybe not. But whether it has anything really to do, if you own a house down in low-lying areas with this very slow global sea level rise, not so clear. I mean, it's sort of thing that it'd be kind of fun to talk about. I have reminded some people that in parts of the UK, parts of where we live, yeah, sea level changes by several meters twice a day. It's the tide going. Tide going in and out, and if you're worried about a storm surge, or say from a hurricane, which we get, you don't normally get, the big thing that matters is whether it hits at high tide or low tide. It doesn't matter whether sea levels come up by a centimeter or two the last few years. This is the kind of issue that we, the scientific community, cope with, and I'll remind you of, you know, what do the words mean. It's very difficult. I mean, this is a very difficult subject. There are a lot of parts of the world that are vulnerable to flooding from rising sea level, and not any of the details. In the center, you can see it. Places like Bangladesh, the low-lying islands of the tropical Pacific and Indian Ocean, places like Florida. Some of you have been to the U.S., Cape Cod, very valuable real estate there. Over the next decades, this is a very serious issue. Over the next 20 years, it's more a question of, well, will there be more frequent hurricanes? Will there be bigger storm surges? And the point I'm trying to make is that there are very different timescales in this problem. And remember Hurricane Katrina, which hit New Orleans. And if Katrina had hit at high tide, it would have been an even bigger disaster than it had hit at low tide. Now, if a Katrina hits, a Katrina-like hurricane hits in 100 years, well, sea level will be higher, and if it hits at high tide, it will be just that much worse. And so it gets to be a complicated subject, and what do you do about it? I thought I could get some British examples, but there are maps equivalent in the UK of places that are vulnerable. Some of you have read, this is Cape Cod, and there have been elaborate studies of what happens as sea level comes up. And I'll say a few words about sea level, because my little summary of what I was going to talk about did involve the ocean. And so storm surges, this is Long Island, New York City, and vulnerability to hurricanes, other storms, or if you like, to tsunamis. I mean, remember what happened in Japan, Sumatra? That's the ocean coming in inland, and again, depending on the state of the tide, depending upon where you are, and depending upon mean sea level, it can make a great big difference. And there are equivalent maps for the UK. This is a very complicated picture. There are parts of the world where sea level is falling. Those are the blue areas. There are parts of the world, red, yellow, where it appears to be rising. And you can ask, I'm happy to talk about how you would make such a map as that. And the oceanographer's problem, my field, is, well, why? And if sea level seems to have been falling over here for the last 20 years in the Western Indian Ocean, is that going to continue? I mean, you might say, well, that's wonderful. There are some low-lying islands here which are extremely vulnerable to rising sea level. There are some very special places where this few millimeters a year does make a difference. And if we could say, oh, that's going to go on for the next 100, 200 years, I'd say that's a good thing. And this gets one into the science of sea level and the oceans. And again, you shouldn't pay any attention to any of the details of these things. Let's just look at this. Why is sea level rising? Well, you know, basically, there are two reasons. There's actually a third I'll mention at the end, just because it's interesting. One is the ocean does seem to be warming up. You warm water, it expands. The other is that if you melt land ice, not sea ice, which floats, if you melt land ice, you add water to the ocean. And so there's now kind of an interesting problem. Are the glaciers melting, and how fast is this going to happen? And just to show you some of the complexity of what we worry about, this estimate, the sort of the yellow-green areas, it's supposed to be some red in there, are places where the Greenland ice sheet seems to be getting thicker. The blue areas are places where it seems to be thinning. And now what you've got to do, talk about where do you get this from, you can try to add up the positive areas and subtract the negative areas and say what's left over and how big is that. And that's a very small difference of two very large numbers. And why is it melting along the edge? It looks like an edge effect, doesn't it? And the argument you can hear about from the science community is that the reason that the so-called outlet glaciers are advancing and melting into the ocean is because the ocean has warmed at the outer edge. And so the glaciers are kind of like a flying buttress. They come in and they rest on the seafloor. And if you start melting them there, you remove the buttress and they start to move the way a cathedral wall would fall over if you remove the buttress. Well, is this going to go on? Is this big enough to do what we see in terms of sea level? If you remember, to just give you a little bit of the flavor of it, I showed you that ice core record that went back 400,000 years. That means some of the ice in Antarctica, there's an Antarctic picture coming up in just a second, is hundreds of thousands of years old. We think that some of the ice in Antarctica is a million years old, which means the ice sheet, the ice here, is perhaps 100,000 years old. It means that Greenland remembers what the meteorological conditions were 100,000 years ago. So what's going to happen? It's in some sense record. You've all probably had the experience of going into a big stone house and realizing that it's much cooler than the outside air, or much warmer. It just says that if you've got enough mass, you remember the temperatures of the last days or weeks, and that's part of what's going on here. Some of the Greenland ice sheet surely is remembering what's called the Little Ice Age, 300-400 years ago. It's probably remembering the so-called medieval warm period when Europe was supposed to have been warmer than normal. This is all part of this problem of figuring out what is going on, and then what everybody cares about, what does the future bring? I'm going to skip, because I gave you that. Here's sea level, because that's a fairly immediate quantity and much more meaningful global mean, reconstructed back to 32,000 years before the present. And then this one goes back to 200,000 years before the present. Sea level has risen, as best people can estimate it, over the last roughly 20,000 years as those big continental ice sheets melted. And the continental ice sheets are still there. They're called the Greenland ice sheet and the Antarctic ice sheet. That's what's left. But they're not gone. And if you melted all of them, which nobody predicts will happen anytime soon, you'd raise global mean sea level by something like 70 meters, and you can think about what that would do to human civilization. Nobody's predicting that, but it's quite clear that in the past it has risen by 10 times the present value, and you'd like to understand that, and is it possible? And I think I'm almost done here. There are a lot of things I can talk about, which I'm going to skip over because I'm going too long. Things like the forcing of climate by human population growth. In some ways, you might say the climate problem is a human population problem, and we can go there if anybody wants. I rather like that. Some people do that. I'm almost done. But there are a lot of things I could talk about, clearly, that I'm kind of skipping over there. Let me go backwards here. I think this is my last picture. I'll go back a little bit. This is not untypical of some of the contexts of the discussion about global change. This man, as it was written up by this newspaper, won the Nobel Prize in physics. And so this automatically makes him an expert on everything. And he basically says, don't worry, because what he says there is actually true. I've tried to show you that. The climate in the past has changed enormously. And he's saying it's changed by so much that human beings can't do very much about it. And he says the Earth is still going to be here. And, of course, that's true. One can't argue with that. What he seems to fail to appreciate, of course, is that a number of things are true that haven't been true in the past. One of them is that there's something over 7 billion people here, a lot of them living in coastal regions, a lot of them on the edge of starvation. And that the time scale that he's talking about is thousands to millions of years, and that's not much use to somebody who's got a shorefront house, and to be told, well, eventually sea level will go back down again next time there's a glaciation. So it's a complete muddle. I keep reminding people that this thing, which is now everywhere, was never actually distributed because it was a worst-case poster in the event of a successful German invasion of the UK. They were going to distribute that. I'm told that the original, if you can find an original, it's very valuable because they were destroyed when it was mainly when it was clear it wasn't going to happen. So you can take that attitude. Well, you know, worst case, just keep calm and carry on. So I'll end with that. You know, somebody falling off a building can say, well, nothing's happened so far. Let's just soldier on. So let me stop with that. I could talk for days about actually many of these. And, you know, kind of let's see if there's anything anybody would like to pursue. I've got pictures of other things, and I can wave my arms about all kinds of things. Okay?
No intention to break your flow, but we have found it helpful for us to take a break. So we'll bring your hat round. Please feel free to come and get a bit more in the way of refreshments. We'll start again in about 5 minutes' time. Thank you.